When we talk about AI and finance, the headlines often outpace the reality. But under the surface, there are real use cases, and some of them are game-changing. From AI-generated research to generative tools transforming advisor workflows, the pace of change is staggering. So where does wealth management fit in? And how can wealth managers stay ahead of the curve without falling for the hype? Today, we're digging into it all with someone who's not just watching the change, but who's part of shaping it. Hi, and welcome to Wealth Insider, a podcast by Performative. This is where industry meets insight, where we sit down for honest and engaging conversations with voices from every corner of the financial world. Together, we explore trends, strategies, and partnerships that are shaping the future of wealth management. Wealth Insider brings you closer to the people and the ideas that are driving the industry forward. I'm Christian Lindvall, Global Commercial Director at Performative, and today I am thrilled to be joined by our very own CEO, Albert Geisler-Fox, who has had a front row seat to how AI is reshaping the financial services industry. Albert, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Maybe a good place to start, broad, is that there's so much buzz around AI in the financial services industry, from the trading desk to compliance teams. What feels most real about it to you? What are you most excited about?
I think when I interact with clients, I'm super excited to see how businesses are literally transforming based off of the changes that are currently available in the marketplace to financial services institutions. I think the move from RPA and simple automation into actual intelligent workflows being drafted to almost recreate human processes is super exciting for me. And I think the way that it is currently transforming the industry is at a pace that I don't think we've seen with a technological advancement in the last, probably ever.
Earlier this year, I read about UBS launching AI-generated avatars, and they're meant to deliver research briefs to clients. So essentially having 24/7 access to like digital AI avatar. How do you think the customer experience is when they're using AI-generated avatars versus a real human?
I think it's such a good example for how you can augment your client experience through putting an offering together that helps the client in ways that they have not had access to before. I don't think UBS's intention is to, you know, pivot away from human experiences. I think the idea is to augment, similar to what you probably have today when you have a hotline you can call for 24/7. I don't know, if you lose your credit card, I think you can call someone almost throughout, like 24/7. I think this is, you know, an experiment to try to see if you can augment that relationship even further by giving access to someone capable that can synthesize hundreds of thousands of pages of information and still putting a human in front, or what looks like a human, in front of people 24/7. I think it's a fantastic idea, and I can't wait to see how UBS takes that to market.
So let's zoom in on some real applications. Where are you seeing AI actually make a difference?
Well, you know, in a plethora of different ways. I think right now, I think one of the really cool examples of AI that we see currently is in fraud detection, in processes that might have taken, you know, hundreds of thousands of exceptions globally for people to sit and review for AML procedures. All of that now, you probably have a case officer that's able to work through 3, 4, 5 times the amount of work that they were before. I think that's a really, really good example, because AML is typically an activity where you require access to a lot of information that can, for a human, inevitably will be hard to get your head around in a couple of minutes. So AI is such a fantastic tool, and the way that it's being applied there in across all major banks by now, I think, is fantastic. I think some of the maybe less exciting stuff, for example, I think is when it goes a bit too far. I think we've all read the Klarna case study that, yes, that I think led quite a bit of their customer experience team go, and then had to sort of go out and pivot back into the experience because they felt like, you know, LLMs and AI wasn't able to do what they had hoped that it would. And so I think there are so many different ways that this is being applied, maybe a little bit too fast across some organizations, such as Klarna. But I think it's astonishing to see.
So I saw a stat from Accenture that leading banks have been able to automate nearly 40% of manual tasks in the payment sector, which is sounds incredible. From a manual task perspective, where else is this going to lead? Like, how efficient can an advisor become by using AI tools?
Well, again, I think remembering the premise of what AI can help us do, it's a fantastic tool to help us synthesize information from hundreds of thousands of data sources at once. So in my opinion, the activities that are really ripe for digitization with AI, if they haven't already been, all of the manual processes that requires people to scan through tens of thousands of documents. I've seen really, really cool POCs in the legal divisions of banks that can quickly synthesize across all of the different contracts that the banks has and understand the impact of what one line might do to, you know, literally millions of different contracts that they have in their archives. I think in the workflow, the way that we think about the way that the COO of a bank would think about workflows is super, super interesting that you can, that I think it's getting a lot easier to modify those with AI than to understand, again, the implications of, in payments is a good example of where you typically have quite advanced workflows that might have many different breakpoints and many different outcomes. And so understanding how those are materialized when they go through, I think is one of the coolest ways to apply AI in banks right now.
You speak with a lot of leaders in tech and finance. What's their take on AI?
We started Performative 5 years ago. And I think throughout those 5 years, those have also been the, you know, catalyst years for the at least general adoption of AI and have become a word that everyone now is familiar with in society. So I think for me, it's been interesting to see industry leaders go from being pretty much unaware of the opportunities in AI to be, I think, somewhat scared of the implications and how, and having, you know, seeing the market opportunity and seeing the automation opportunities, but not being able to or be afraid of not really knowing how to implement those into their businesses. And zoom forward to, I think this changed maybe 2 years ago. I think today it also there is no leaders in banking where AI isn't a top priority for them. I think budgets have been unlocked to research. I think people have been giving the mandate to try to find opportunities within organizations to implement it. And I think there is no banking CEO today that doesn't have this at the forefront of their brain.
So maybe we can bring the lens back to our own industry. Where do you see AI having the biggest impact in the wealth management industry?
So that's a great question. And I think the example that you just shared from UBS is a fantastic way for them to try to augment the proposition that they have in the wealth management market. Personally, and this is sort of my own conviction, is that wealth management is about people and it's about human connections and it's about storytelling what you will help the customer do and building trust in that. So for me, I am committed and I would also say quite certain that the human to human relationship is not going anywhere. So for me, I see the opportunities in everything that has to do with augmenting the client experience and making it easier to be a wealth manager. That means everything from orchestrating workflows to making sure that documents are correct, to making sure that reports are sent out in time, and making sure that making the life of the advisor as easy as it possibly can be.
It's something to empower, but it's not going to replace that element. I think actually one of the things, our first guest, Renko from Value Edge, I was so impressed by the way he spoke about customer relationships and the just almost obsessive focus on, are we having this one-to-one unique relationship, creating a great experience for them every time? And I think he even mentioned AI empowers them to, yeah, for manual tasks, things like that. But when I spoke to him, I'm like, there's no possible way AI can ever replace the Renkos of the world, what Value Edge is providing to their customers just on a human level.
Exactly right. And it's I think the opportunity there, and I think when you look at who's doing very, very well in the industry, it is people that are completely aligned with their customers, and it is people that safeguards their customers. And I think in a really, really important way of making sure that your clients feel safe and feel, and, you know, for you to showcase, you know, and build trust with your customers is face to face. And I don't think that we're ever going to see, you know, the odd lunch going away or the, you know, the client meeting. And I like to think at least that the industry is built on trust. And for a wealth manager to become a success and for him to build his business, I don't think that you can do that without that trust. And I think that there's many different ways of building it. And I think that there are asset managers typically that might not work that closely with their customers. But when we speak to the family offices, to the actual wealth management firms, whenever I speak to leaders there, they all say the same thing, which is that building that trust and making sure that their customers feel safe and making sure that their customers feel like they are getting the service that they require and the attention that they require, those are typically the most successful firms that I get to speak with.
So you started Performative 5 years ago, roughly. What was the moment you realized AI was going to be a core part of the industry?
So I remember, I think the first time I stumbled upon AI in financial services was in my previous career, where I got a demo from from Luxembourg, a company that went up. This was when I worked at a wealth management firm before. There was two, I think they were university professors that had left to build a tool to do, that basically was an add-on on top of Bloomberg Portfolio Manager, which was supposed to be both for security identification and also like risk management rebalancer. Pretty cool. And I don't think I really understood the implications that AI had on that and how it was so different from the tools that we had at the time. And I remember speaking to them and I just remember, you know, the look in their eyes when they said, you know, don't worry, in 5 years, everyone will know what AI is. And I think their conviction in their product and the space that they operated in was probably the catalyst event to getting me excited about AI. And when we started Performative, for us, I think some of the tools were much less developed than they are today. But today, I think it has been a really, really important part of our go-to-market and in our ability to scale as quickly as we have.
Maybe we can go back to the advisor's role. So how do you see the advisor's role evolving alongside AI?
So I think pretty much in line with what we discussed so far, I think that in the next couple of years, the most important part about wealth management needs to go back to the roots of it, right? Making sure that your customers are safeguarded and that they feel safe and that you are able to provide them with the trust that it requires to maintain that client relationship. So for me, I see the successful wealth managers being able to harness that and to go to the market with a deeply customized offering that is still wrapped in a human experience. And that means for the humans of the industry that they need to be even better at what they probably already do and double down on the deeper personal relationships and on building that trust together with the customers face to face. Not spending time collating decks or putting together information, but in fact, harnessing personal relationships.
Yeah, and I've been really inspired talking to a lot of the advisors where our solution is helping them day to day, of course, but even the ones that they're actually bullish on AI tools, right? It's meant to help them to automate their work. So I expected, I guess, maybe to hear that they felt threatened by AI, but I think they're like super excited to ingest all of it into their day-to-day life because they are so focused on that client relationship.
Exactly. It's an augmentation play. It's not a replacement game. And it's about making sure that the advisors have the tools that they need and making sure that that runs as seamless as possible and making sure that the operations side of things are automated so that the overhead of running a wealth management shop should be as little as possible.
So you mentioned with the advisors, the client relationship side, like just being obsessive about that, that's super important, obviously. But from a skill set perspective, maybe a wealth advisor just out of school is starting at their first firm. Like what skills do you think they need to have right off the bat?
I know I sound a bit like a broken record, but I'm going to go back to what I said before, right? It's building, you know, trust with your customer is paramount. And so some of the things that I would look for if I was a wealth manager looking to hire staff straight out of school is, of course, the ability to create a personal connection. And I think that you get that not just from school, but from everywhere else in life. And then, of course, being able to showcase how your firm's positioning is, making sure that, you know, of course, that your finance knowledge is strong enough. One of the things that I spend a lot of time with people coming straight out of school is to sort of tell them in finance to go back to the basics, making sure that they understand to read a balance sheet and they understand how businesses are run and even, you know, the difference between equity and debt. I mean, some of the basics I think are really, really important. And I think the stronger of knowledge that you have in finance in general, the better you're able to convey it to your customers in language that they understand and trust.
So there's huge potential with AI, but also some genuine concerns. How do you think organizations should responsibly enact AI initiatives?
It's a great question. And I think it's a maturity question as well. And I think you need to start nimble and then build out bigger workflows from there. I think, and this is probably one of the big risks, especially in large organizations, of implementing AI, is to make sure that your data governance structures are in place and making sure that all of the upstream systems that an AI is supposed to ingest and synthesize data from are controlled in a way where the systems only have access to the data that you want it to have access to. I think we just saw a couple of days ago a zero-click vulnerability in Microsoft Copilot product where you could actually prompt the Copilot product that would read all of your incoming email to supply confidential data to an attacker. And that goes back to the same principle of data governance and making sure that your data properties and access security is in place. So I think that is really, really important. I think not having too large of a footprint on it in your first deployment is really important so that when it fails, it does so in a somewhat contained environment where the implications of the decisions that it has taken are easy to trace. I think one of the most important bits about how we as a firm use AI is making sure that you have traceable audit logs on every single change or decision that you let an AI make. So that is sort of, we've learned that the hard way. So making sure that you can trace every single action, every single document that was synthesized or read from, that's really important.
Maybe that's a good segue into pulling back the curtain a little bit on how we use AI internally at Performative. How do you decide to use AI in your own workflows?
We use it in a plethora of different ways. It goes into reading very, very long documentation that we get from the partners that we work with, from exchanges to brokers that help us quicker build interfaces for those different fix routes that we're connected to. Custodian for end of day files that we have to ingest. I think we're able to get a build Mebus really quickly. We've recently launched a feature around cash flow projections where we help our customers visualize future liquidity drains to their portfolios. And that uses AI, I think, throughout the entire stack of that feature, from estimating future dividend payments into understanding loan documents and helping all of that data be visualized into a chart. I think those are some examples of how we use it, but holistically and strategically throughout the organization, it is part of what we do, not only as consumers of commercial AI products, but also as innovators and as producers of our own models.
So what principles guide how we introduce AI to clients?
That's a great question. And it's typically an area of concern. And it's one of the things that all of our customers from small to large expect us to have really good answers for. Again, one thing that I'm hyper-focused on is traceability. So making sure that we can account for why a decision was taken and what data was used to reach that decision. And so we spend a lot of time on that and using our audit log to explain all of that information. But I think just as much as when you let an AI take a decision, we always make sure that it does so in a very, I'm going to use the word naive fashion, where it will rather want to reject the task if it is not committed to how it should be resolved. and escalate that to a human. And that sort of means that we don't want it to take decisions on information that it doesn't feel like is sufficient to make the call, but rather than escalate that. And that, of course, means that the straight-through process goes down a little bit. But typically, for most of the firms that we work with, a lot of where we are implementing AI, a lot of the places where we implement AI are implemented in areas that might have been 100% human or 0% straight-through process before.
Are there any red lines for you when it comes to AI?
I think untraceability. And I think that should be a guiding principle, in my opinion, throughout the financial services industry. So anything where we can't explain at least what data was used to reach a decision, we don't implement. And so that is sort of my guiding red line, is that if we can't explain what data went into making a decision, we don't implement it. And of course, that means from a lot of the research models that come out, a lot of the hyper black box models that come out right now, we as a firm have chosen not to implement them in our core offering for our customers that have asks or requests for those models. We have, I think, a pretty thriving ecosystem of external partners and plugins that you can embed onto our software. But as a firm, you know, as a provider at least, that is sort of my red line.
So where do you think you'll see the biggest transformation from AI in the next 5 years?
So I think across pretty much all industries in the last 1 to 2 years, we've seen AI agents being the rave of the town. And that is models that are able to autonomously do work that otherwise would have taken a human. I think that the financial services industries have tons of processes, especially in the back office and middle office divisions, both of large banks, but also asset managers and wealth managers. And a lot of those are ripe for autonomous work. And I think that in 2030, we're going to see a completely different hiring schedule across different banks. And I think that we're going to see a lot of manual tasks that might have just been outsourced be replaced by AI agents.
So what excites you most about Performative's own roadmap in this space?
So I think we're immensely excited by the opportunity to come in to both super digital wealth managers, to, I would say, more traditional banks, and work with their teams in order to make sure that they are empowered to build the best client relationships that they can and the best client experience that they possibly can put to the market. Some of that has big implications in work required downstream of making that happen. And so the way that we're able to help automate a lot of those processes in the back and middle office space are activities that excite me immensely. And for our roadmap, that is also part of the offering that we are taking to market. Now we've done so with corporate actions and manual adjustments for those. And we're building out, I would say, more and more intelligent offers to make sure that especially the downstream components of what we take to market can be delivered in as short of a time frame as possible. So I think I'm super excited to see AI agents be an embedded part of even smaller wealth managers day to day. And if we can commercialize at grand scale at putting that out as an offering to the market, that would be something that would excite me immensely.
I think that's a fantastic place to end this. Albert, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a great conversation, and we'll look to have you back on a new topic soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's it for this episode of Wealth Insider. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find more insights on performative.com, and we'll be back soon with more conversations from the people redefining wealth management.